From Pierre Corey's Medical Musings, The Letter from Sternbutche, A Portrait of the Golden Elixir. Yesterday, I introduced the Emerald Tablet as a record of nature's cycle. What follows is the next step in that sequence. Letter from a Woman Alchemist on the True Stone of Wisdom by Theosophia Sternbutche gives a portrait of the essence brought forth from within that cycle. Her letter does not primarily describe how that essence is extracted. It describes what it is like once brought forth, a hidden thing drawn from stone, activated, multiplied, and rendered capable of restoration. The letter appears to originate in the late 17th century and was later printed in Berlin in 1779. MB first encountered it in 2006 when an acquaintance passed it along to him. Interestingly, after discovering the letter, he attempted to contact an antiquities professor to discuss it. Soon afterward, the webpage that hosted the letter from Sternbutche disappeared. For nearly 20 years, he searched the internet for it periodically, although he had mentioned it in passing a few times during our initial work together. I had never seen it, so I knew little of what it really contained. One day, as our alchemical research deepened, he discovered it on an archived Wayback Machine page dated June 5, 2002. It is a complement to the kinds of spiritual treatises found in works available in The Divine Couple, edited by Robert Foss, and in Wisdom's book, The Sophia Anthology, edited by Arthur Versluys. Because the archived page includes a notice restricting duplication, I will not reproduce the full text. Here, the page introduced it as follows. This is a never-before-published letter from a female spiritual alchemist of the late 17th century. Instead, I will only quote the passages necessary for analysis. Readers who wish to read the full letter can do so at this link. Its meaning will likely be much clearer after working through the interpretation that follows. Alchemy occupied dangerous territory. Its practitioners could be accused of heresy, fraud, sorcery, or economic subversion, with gold-making chief among them. For that reason, alchemical authors rarely wrote as identifiable individuals. Names were chosen to signal standing within the great work rather than to denote lineage, biography, or authorship. Even so, real historical alchemists, obscure as many were, usually left some trace. Sternbutche appears to be a constructed name. No historical figure can be securely traced to it, and no record survives beyond the letter itself. Whatever the reason for that, the text puts very little emphasis on personal identity. In alchemical writing, a feminine voice often signals a perspective focused on receiving, holding, and correctly recognizing a process, rather than actively driving or asserting it. Theosophia suggests divine wisdom as known through nature. Stern points toward what is fixed or celestial. Butch means book or record. Taken together, the name suggests a role more than a person. When I first read the letter, I had not yet undergone what alchemy calls preparation, what I would describe more simply as learning to read role grammar. Only later, after weeks and months of working across all three texts tracing repeated words, roles, images, and patterns against the mineral chemistry, Shimonishi's operations, and the qualities of the mineral essence brought forth from the process did those same lines begin to resolve into specific, testable meanings. In that state, the text sounded mystical and cryptic to the point of unintelligibility. She writes of a hidden essence drawn from stone, activated by heat, mediated by a mercurial medium, purified in stages, and rendered capable of restoring what had been corrupted. She emphasizes circulation, repetition, and return, and insists that the substance is not consumed by use, but instead multiplies in virtue. What finally became clear to me was that Sternbutche is not primarily concerned with giving the full procedure. She describes the nature, value, and restorative power of the mineral essence once it has been produced, while preserving only a few glimpses of the steps by which it is brought forth. The letter is written in a symbolic language that conceals the process from a literal reading while revealing it to those with some knowledge of the operations behind it. Before going further, I should briefly restate the basic interpretive rule. The roles assigned to sulfur, mercury, and salt below are not inventions of ours, but part of the alchemical tradition itself. What mattered for our work was learning to read them as functions within a process rather than as fixed substances. At the risk of repetition, I present the key again here so the passages that follow are not read literally. Sulfur, activity, heat, oxidation, transformation, mercury, fluidity, mediation, transport, dissolution, salt, structure, stability, fixation. Let's start with the first. Form and materia are two substances, which are our field and magnet. because every agens needs its corresponding receptacle. Materia refers to a raw earthly mineral. Forma is an activating force, that is, a fire, water, or sulfur-driven action. The marriage of form and matter mobilizes dormant mineral chemistry into a bioactive ionic form outside the mineral body, able to interact with water, bind impurities, structure charge, and restore balance. Read this way, the passage mirrors Shimonishi's Themerox, produced by sulfuric acid acting on vermiculite. One sulfuric, one mercurial, king and queen, greatest MD until united. Hermetic texts consistently describe sulfur as solar, active, and fiery, and mercury as receptive, dissolving, and mediating. This tincture is powerful enough to be used as medicine. Prevent all illnesses. In alchemical language, medicine refers to a substance that restores order and coherence, while illness names any state of corruption, imbalance, or decay within a system, not a specific biomedical condition. This is the multiplication in quality. The tincture is multiplied in its virtue. The multiplication in quantity proceeds thus. In the older literature, multiplication did not refer to an increase in mass, but to an increase in effect, a gain in virtue disproportionate to the quantity applied. In this passage, those opposing roles map cleanly onto sulfuric acid acting on vermiculite. Sulfuric acid supplies the activating force, while vermiculite serves as the receptive mineral body, and together they mediate the release of mineral essence from rock into water. In modern terms, it describes a function whose influence extends far beyond its physical volume. This multiplicative property is the clearest connection between Sternbach's golden elixir and Shimonishi's Themerox. A single milliliter of Themerox can clarify up to 10 liters of water. Amina, a 10% dilution of Themerox, can clarify roughly 1 liter. For centuries, the golden elixir was described as possessing the same multiplicative property. One of the first observations Shimonishi made about his mineral extract was that it behaved in precisely this way. At this point, the reader has enough of our keen in hand to begin recognizing some of Sternbach's recurring patterns without full guidance. What follows is a small cluster of phrases from the letter that can now be read more fruitfully than they could at the outset. Descriptions of the person who might succeed in the work appear in phrases such as, "Whoever wants to do something fruitful in this work should turn to it with all his diligence, work, and care. One cannot hurry the work. Whoever can make them lay together can thus unite them in separ, ably, and make something corporeally new." Descriptions of the substance itself, referred to as medicine in the, they circle the same relations and operations repeatedly, one of alchemy's most characteristic habits, and they prepare the reader for the even more elaborate repetitions of the six keys of eudoxus.